This is VOA News via remote. I'm Michael Brown. Governments across Europe are ratcheting up restrictions to try to beat the resurgence of the coronavirus that has sent new confirmed infections on the continent to their highest weekly level since the start of the pandemic. The World Health Organization said Tuesday there were more than 700,000 new COVID-19 cases reported in Europe last week, a jump of 34% from the previous week. Britain, France, Russia, and Spain accounted for more than half of the new infections. The increasing caseload is partly the result of more testing, but the UN Health Agency noted that deaths were also up 16% last week from the week before. Doctors are warning that while many of the new cases are in younger people who tend to have milder symptoms, the virus could again start spreading widely among older people, resulting in more serious illnesses. The International Monetary Fund is projecting a deep global recession in 2020 because of the coronavirus pandemic, with global economies expected to shrink just over 4%. Speaking at the IMF's World Economic Outlook Forum in Boston Tuesday, the IMF chief economist Geeta Gopinath said the pandemic shut down business and industry throughout the world. Gopinath also stressed that the national monetary and fiscal policies should not be held back. Specifically, she said government should focus on direct aid to households and businesses. For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic candidate, and President Donald Trump are ramping up their campaigning with the election here in the U.S. Just 3 weeks, Biden on Tuesday took his campaign to Florida, a state he called crucial for a victory. On Tuesday, President Trump took his reelection campaign to what political analysts consider the other key battleground state, Pennsylvania, where Biden was born. An average of recent major polls show Biden leading Trump in both Florida and Pennsylvania. Thousands of conservative Muslims marched in Indonesia's capital Tuesday demanding that the government revoke a new law they say will cripple labor rights, with some clashing with police. Authorities blocked off streets leading to the presidential palace in Jakarta, where clashes between riot police and rock-throwing demonstrators, including workers and students, broke out last Thursday. The job creation law, approved by Parliament last week, is expected to substantially change Indonesia's labor system and natural resources management. The United States and Germany are urging Turkey to pull back a ship it has returned to waters that it and Greece both claim. Washington's announcing what it called a calculated provocation. The Turkish Navy said Sunday that its exploration vessel was heading back to eastern Mediterranean waters between the Greek island of Crete and Cyprus, weeks after it left after the two sides agreed to hold talks. In a strongly worded statement, the State Department said the U.S. deplores the decision by Turkey and noted that Greece's search jurisdiction over areas where the ship plans to operate through October the 22nd. Protests in Lagos continue for a sixth day Tuesday, with Nigerians demonstrating against police brutality and government. Demonstrations have continued even after Nigeria's police spokesman announced that a unit implicated in a video posted online was being formally dissolved. The unit called the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS, has been the subject of much of the protests. Early this month, young Nigerians started a Twitter campaign for the disbandment of the unit after the video of SARS agents beating up a man circulated online. And a judge in South Sudan has sentenced two men to death for stealing two cows and killing the man who owned the animals. For more news, join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app via remote. This is VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A warning of more violence as gaining votes for president this Sunday, October 18th.
From Sunday yesterday, we registered a lot of violence in Kanka, and it is turning into a confrontation between ethnic groups.
A new report examines crackdown on dissent in some Francophone countries. Governments and social media companies are urged to do more to protect the girls and women from online abuse. A Catholic priest is suspended in Uganda for wanting to run for parliament. And Comoros Islands opposition parties announce a united front against President Assoumani.
This unity also is based on two things. The first thing is that come 2021, the president has to be from Anjouan. And the next election, the next president must come from the island of Moweli.
And Ghana is working to save its eroding coastlines. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A member of Guinea's opposition says the next few days before that country's October 18 presidential election could be a nightmare situation unless something is done. Faya Milimono, leader of the Liberal Bloc Party, who is boycotting Sunday's vote, is proposing a transitional period to avert any further violence. 82-year-old President Alpha Conde is running for a third term despite opposition claims that his bid is violating the constitution. Violence erupted this week when Conde's supporters prevented main challenger, 68-year-old Silou Dalein Diallo, from campaigning in the Kankan region, a stronghold of President Conde. Milimono says the campaign has entered a dangerous phase, ethnic violence.
Mr. Silou Dalein Diallo, one of the candidates campaigning, is prevented from going to Upper Guinea, the stronghold of Alpha Conde. From Sunday to yesterday, we registered a lot of violence in Kanka. Many people were injured. Many houses were destroyed. Many commerce were destroyed. And it is turning into a confrontation between ethnic groups. The situation is very dangerous, and if nothing is done, we can expect the worst in the days to come.
The understanding is that President Alpha Conde apologized for the violence that took place.
Yeah, he did it. But it's not a problem of apologizing. It is a problem of establishing justice. Many people have been killed. Many houses were destroyed. It's not enough for the president to come and say, I do apologize. No, we need justice. We hear the speech he gave over there, but that is not the way to go. We need justice in this country.
The prediction you are giving is that unless something is done, what would the opposition like to be done?
The problem is the opposition versus the movement. No, we have 12 candidates. I think the normal way of doing things is to allow everybody to campaign everywhere around the country. But how come you can expect a free and fair election if some candidates even cannot visit some part of the country? How come can you expect the election to be free and fair in some areas where candidates are not even allowed to campaign? That's the whole question today. So as we have said, over and over, what is going to happen on the 18th cannot be called election. Guinea is in crisis. We need to do something different to get out of that crisis. Those elections are not going to be the solution. They are going to be even the nightmare for this country.
Has the opposition been in touch with ECOWAS?
Yes, they did. But to be honest, we cannot count on ECOWAS leaders because the former leaders have clearly chosen to protect their friend, president, violating all the protocols, violating all the constitutions. The covers is no longer the covers of the people. It is the covers of the president, the dictatorship, And what may happen in West Africa, the most dangerous that's going to happen in West Africa is West Africa to look like Central Africa, like Cameroon, like Congo with Sassou Nguesso, and Equatorial Guinea with Obiang Nguema. That is not what the people of West Africa will expect today. But to be honest, nothing you can expect from the COVID. They are protecting Alpha Condé in Guinea, and they are protecting Alassane Ouattara in Cote d'Ivoire.
Fayyad Limono is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Crackdowns on dissent and citizens' ability to express their critical opinions ahead of upcoming elections in many Francophone African countries, according to a new report out this week by Civicos. Senior West Africa researcher Francois Patel tells Ricky Schreier that in Guinea, Benin, Ivory Coast, Niger, and Togo, residents are speaking out against internet outages and more.
First, it's reducing because there's been internet shutdowns and internet disruptions recorded. So for instance, Togo shut down the internet in 2017. It did so again earlier this year. It shut down access to social media sites. Guinea also shut down access to social media sites in March, just as it was going on a constitutional referendum and legislative elections. Benin shut down the internet and access to social media sites in 2019. So first of all, people can't express their views online because their access to internet is being restricted. And that really prevents people from expressing their views, but all their views including on what's happening on the ground. It's also preventing journalists and human rights defenders from reporting on the violations that they are documenting.
What kind of human rights violations are those? Can you tell me more specifically?
There are multiple violations in the context of elections, including on the right to peaceful assembly. You know, protests are being banned in Cote d'Ivoire, for instance, since August this year. There are protests of pro-democracy groups that have been banned repeatedly in Guinea since mid last year. And when people, you know, ignore the ban, they get repressed. And that means, you know, the groups get dispersed by force, by the security forces, including the military who are deployed on those sites with batons, live ammunition. There's been at least 50 people killed in the context of protests in Guinea, for instance, since October 2019. There's been 12 people killed in Cote d'Ivoire since Ouattara announced that he was running for a third term in August in 2020. So that's the kind of violations that tend to happen in the context of the election. There are also, on top of that, there are also arrests of pro-democracy groups or leaders and human rights defenders.
How does access to justice or lack thereof have an impact on these kind of things?
Actually, it's a very immediate issue in the countries of focus in the study, in particular in Benin and in Cote d'Ivoire, for instance. Cote d'Ivoire has been ordered by the African Court of Human Rights to release some of the pro-Soros supporters that have been in detention since December 2019. The court ordered Cote d'Ivoire to release them. Not only has Cote d'Ivoire refused to abide by the court's order, in reprisals against the court's decision, it's withdrawn the ability of its citizens to seize the court. And Benin has done a similar thing. The court ruled against Benin in its treatment of opposition leaders. Benin has ignored the decision, and it's similarly to Cote d'Ivoire, withdrawn the ability of its citizens to seize the court. Benin has gone a step further. It's also arguing that its citizens can no longer access or no longer seize the Community Court of Justice of the ECOWAS community.
That was Civicos senior West Africa researcher Francois Patel, who was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. A worrying new report urges governments and social media companies to do more to protect girls and women from online abuse. Kuzai Navashe has more from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Plan International joined the world in commemorating International Day of the Girl Child under the theme Freedom Online. Angela Moriti is the group's country manager in Zimbabwe.
The theme serves two main purposes. Firstly, it shines a light on the harassment and abuse girls and young women face on online platforms, which is a barrier to their leadership and reduces their self-confidence. And secondly, it calls upon government and technological companies to put in place measures that protect girls and young women online.
This is happening against a background of a recent survey.
Plan International recently conducted a survey in 22 countries across the globe in an effort to understand girls' and young women's experiences on online platforms. And this is the biggest ever survey conducted by us on online violence. And according to the survey, the most common type of attack is abusive and insultive language, followed by purposeful embarrassment, body shaming, and threats of sexual violence.
What's worse, this harassment has far-reaching consequences on victims.
This abuse really damages girls' lives, both offline and online, with one in five of those surveyed saying they or a friend they have had been left fearing for their physical safety. Girls say social media companies need to do more to protect them. One in five girls have left or significantly reduced their use of social media after being harassed, while one in 10 have changed the way that they express themselves. So you can see really clearly the impact of online violence on their behavior.
Moriti defines online harassment or abuse as any action carried out using internet or mobile technology that harms others. This includes stalking, bullying, sex-based harassment, defamation, hate speech, gender trolling, and body shaming. The internet has brought women some good opportunities and benefits, but critics say it also has made women more vulnerable in new ways. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashe from Harare.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bati in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 14th. In the Comoros Islands, opposition parties and civil society groups have formed a united front against what they called a perceived constitutional coup by President Azali Assoumani. A constitutional amendment in 2018 removed consecutive term limit, making it likely for President Assoumani to run again, even though his term ends in a few months. Se Mchangama is the CEO and chief editor of Haba FM Radio in Moroni, Comoros.
This unity also is based on two things. The first thing is that come 2021, the president has to be from Anjouan. And the next election, the next president must come from the island of Moueli. This is the basis. So it's not so much negotiations between parties on a national basis or who to follow with, but the basis is whatever the case, Azali must go and elections must be organized to have a candidate from Anjouan. Then those parties, they can have, you know, their own candidates, but, you know, the basis, this front is based on we have to come back to the former constitution so that peace and harmony at their eyes exist, remain in the country. President Azali must go and the next president must come from the island of Anjouan. That is the basis of the agreement.
As you know, in Africa, I think the opposition in Africa, they tend to have a problem when they announce they want to come together. And then maybe somewhere along the line, it breaks down because everyone wants to be president, except for Malawi recently, where the opposition came together. What is the likelihood that this new united opposition will survive or will stay together?
Well, as I say, here the difference, it's not so much now about who and who. But this problem of tournants, you know, that we have three islands now under the union, you know, the fourth island being administered by France. And the question is there a president will be Azali or another one from this island of Grand Comore, the main island? This front seems to be united, expresses its unity to say no in no case. The basis of our unity is to go back to the elections of, you know, that every 5 years, each island, if I may say so, designates, you know, elects the new president. Whether it's too early here, of course, we are very much Africans, you know, especially French-speaking Africa. So whether this will stick or hold, you know, I couldn't say now. Will there be at the end some parties who will say, no, but it has to be in Grand Comore, you know, in the main island? I don't know. It's too early because the declaration has made for us observers here, it is a first, you know, because this leaders, they say that, yes, we are ready to be jailed. You know, this is a kind of front confrontation that has not been there until now, you see. So this is very strong. So we wait to see first what President Azali, will he react or will he choose to see that, okay, they don't have any kind of power, they can mobilize, you know, so let them talk, you know.
Saeed Mchagaman is the CEO and chief editor of Harbor FM Radio in Moroni, Comoros Islands. In Uganda, Archbishop John Baptist Odama has suspended Reverend Father Charles Onne for expressing his interest to run for the Gulu East Constituency parliamentary seat. Archbishop Odama says Father Onne's decision violates the canon law which prohibits priests from participating in active politics. Father Onne said he has asked the Archbishop to relieve him of his priestly duties to join the political struggle. Now, he says the suspension would enable him to focus on campaigning. Monsignor Matthew Odong is the vicar of the Archdiocese of Gulu.
We requested the bishop to relieve him from his duties as a priest so that he could run for political office, member of parliament. So since it was his choice, after the Archbishop talked to him, helped him, guided him, and the Archbishop actually said, okay, if you like to leave, you know, I will suspend you and relieve you completely from carrying out any priestly ministry, and you go and do as you will.
Did the Archbishop say that the priest was in violation of canon law?
Oh, yes. He said what you are requesting is contrary to canon law. Canon law doesn't allow any cleric to join Christian politics. That is completely contrary to the mission of peace. That's what the Archbishop told me.
But the church has been a very progressive church, and so one would think that the priest wanting to join politics would fit in line with the church's position on social justice.
You know, the ministry of a priest is more than just social justice. It is true that the priest to defend the rights and the dignity of the human person, but there are other ministries that he has to perform that is more than just that. Therefore, in his position as a priest, you know, he is to guide God if he goes and then enters the politics. So canon law is very clear that the two do not contradict one another, but at the same time, they are autonomous. Just as the state is autonomous, the church is autonomous.
Was that a mutual decision between the Archbishop and the priest? In other words, did the priest request to be expelled?
He was suspended, means relieved from performing priestly duties, like celebrate the sacraments, you know, by the fact that he wants to enter the politics. Canon law doesn't allow. So he has been suspended, means he has been relieved. According to his request, he has been relieved from performing and celebrating, you know, the sacrament.
Has this kind of thing happened before? I mean, how often does this happen?
Oh, yeah. There are some cases in paradise where, you know, some priests, they ask their bishops, their ordinaries, to allow them, relieve them, being performing priestly ministry so they can go and doing partisan politics.
Monsignor Odong, thank you very much. It's always nice to talk with you.
Thank you, my friend. I'm also praying for America so that you have a successful election. America is the elder brother, so we all look to America. So when America is okay, then the rest of the world is also okay. When America is not okay, you know, the rest of the world will suffer.
Monsignor Matthew Odong is the vicar of the Archdiocese of Gulu in northern Uganda. Ghana has started building seawalls at key points along its shores to stop coastal erosion and protect beaches, communities, and historic buildings. But fishermen said the walls make it hard to pull in their nets, while coastal resorts say the walls hurt their businesses. Stacey Knott has the story from Cape Coast, Ghana.
Ben Iden set up a resort in the coastal town of Almena in 2009, imagining people would flock to its golden beach. However, he has spent much of his time trying to stop rapid coastal erosion, which he attributes to years of illegal sand mining in the area. When authorities finally stepped in, the mining decreased, and to stop further erosion, a rocky sea defence wall was built on the shore in 2017. But this added more woes for the resort, as hotel guests can no longer access the water.
I think that Ghana's tourism potential is really what is at risk. And when I've looked at any promotion which talks about Ghana, one of the things that we always raise, apart from heritage, is our beautiful beachfronts. And I really think that we've got to start putting some effort and some investment behind ensuring, protecting and improving our beachfronts, and they could start right here.
Ghana has an average erosion rate of about 2 metres a year, with some smaller sites seeing up to 17 metres of erosion in 1 year, says Dr. Donatus Anuring from the University of Cape Coast Centre for Coastal Management. He has seen areas where heavy waves and flooding have claimed homes. In response to these issues, the government is building more sea defence walls along its coast. While some of the walls allow beach access, there are concerns about the walls' impact and effectiveness. While the sea defence walls have worked in the short term to stabilise the beach and protect properties, Dr. Anuring questions how they will hold up in the long run as the sea level rises with global warming. While there needed to be measures put in place to save properties, he said other approaches should be considered.
We can consider some soft solution like vegetation, mangroves, or we can mix solutions, and we can have our beaches and even have gardens and proper recreational areas.
While some in the central region campaigned for the seawalls, fishermen, such as Christopher Ohosu, say they fear for their livelihoods, worried the seawalls will block them from doing their already precarious work.
It will disturb us, and all of the time when we are pulling the nets, our minds go there. Because that's the work that we do here. We don't have any work. We do only the sea work that we do.
Ghana's Central Region Minister Kwamina Duncan grew up in the area and has watched the coastline erode over the past 15 years. He said the walls are to protect livelihoods and are constructed to allow for the needs of the fishermen.
I think the broad objective is to protect the townships, and the hotels themselves are not far removed from where the towns are. And it cannot also be done just at one point and some places are left. So if that happened, then somehow the whole objective is defeated.
He expressed hope hotels and communities along the coast will adapt to the walls, as Ghana itself has to adapt to the changing climate. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Cape Coast, Ghana.
And that's it for this Wednesday, October 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
She's in the news moderator Michael Williams and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including both U.S. President Donald Trump and his Democratic Party opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, hit the campaign trail as Election Day draws nearer. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.